Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. The podcast is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. There is a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. My name's Dan Moylan. Hello. And Michael Normanton's with me.
Hello.
So is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
If you want to get all our podcasts ad-free, a daily email and a full digital sub, plus discounts on future merch and magazine specials, have a look at TSB Plus, our new subscription package. Full details of that, thesquareball.net/plus. Straight into white watching then, and reflections on Aston Villa away, where we won 3-0. We had a jolly nice time on Friday, and I still feel quite warm and fuzzy and nice about Leeds. It's a good feeling, this, isn't it? Long may it continue.
I keep watching stuff. That's when I know I've had a good time, when I keep going back to look at things again. There were many times where I'd basically go to a game on a Saturday, and then I'd just try my best to forget about it. I wouldn't want to watch whatever it was, Quest or BBC or whatever the Football League highlights were on. I'd just pretend it hadn't happened until the next week.
Can you believe we had to lower ourselves to Quest? Leeds United Football Club being forced to endure that shite on a Saturday night. Sorry if you do work at Quest, I'm sure it's fine, but you know.
People have complained about PPV, but at least it's not on Quest.
We should only ever have been broadcast on in-flight television on Concorde. Nothing else.
It's a very, very, very niche market, but that's how important we are and how special we are. No, it was good, wasn't it? And I think a quick word again on Patrick Bamford and how well he did on Friday.
During the game, actually, I was sending messages to KG, who you might remember we had the Phil Hay show a while ago, because at the end of last season, we had several discussions about Pat Bamford probably not being good enough for the Premier League. And I just sent him a message as that third went in, just said, what am I watching? Because I didn't think he had it in him, and absolutely fair play to him. He's well and truly made us look like idiots because he cannot stop scoring in the Premier League, and that's fine. I don't being made to look a fool when it's so enjoyable.
I think that's the reassuring thing, is that he hasn't stopped scoring. It was always the worry with Bamford that he goes on runs, and then, I mean, thinking back to this time last season, it was exactly this point last season when he was being dropped for not scoring for 9 games, and he was in that rut where he pretty much all the way until New Year, when Nketiah was fit, you'd see Bamford going off at half time and really wasn't established at all. And there was always that question of, well, if he gets one, he'll score plenty of goals after that, but when's he going to get that one? Is always the worry with Bamford. So far this season, he's scored in 4 out of our 6 games. And even if he had that little 2-game gap where there weren't any goals, it didn't become 3, 4, 5. We weren't getting to that point of wondering when Pat Bamford's going to score again. If he keeps that up, especially if it keeps him on track for his 38 and 38, I might find him tolerable.
I've got to admit, at the start of the season, if someone had told me he'd get 10 or 12 this season, I'd have thought that was absolutely fine. I'd have said that was a reasonable return, and he's going to do it by Christmas.
We can't be the only people who probably thought when Rodrigo came in, well, that's Bamford probably relegated to second choice now, but actually they've dovetailed really nicely in together.
Into each other's arms, as you saw in the celebration.
Beautifully so. I've been reflecting on this, and I wonder if Bamford had maybe, he'd become the sort of the lightning rod for all our anxieties in trying to get promoted, particularly because you're up front, you've got the burden of the number 9 shirt, you've got the burden of the Leeds United badge on your chest. And the word that I used at the time when we were promoted was healed. It feels like I've completely healed from all that anxiety of being in the lower leagues. And suddenly it's like, I feel a lot freer being a Leeds fan. And I wonder if that same feeling has kind of percolated its way through the players, and Bamford seems to just be enjoying the lack of pressure.
I think Rodrigo potentially helps Bamford as well, in that he's someone else who we do expect to score goals. If he's playing as a 10, probably not 20 a season, but you would hope he'll chip in with at least 10 himself. And Rafinha looks like someone who could maybe come in and get extra goals from the wing. Harrison seems to get better every year. So if there's the pressure is spread for Bamford's sake and for all of our sakes, it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and the change from chasing promotion after 16 years to just enjoying what we're doing for the first time in 16 years is a big difference in expectations. Those chances Bamford missed in the first half, if he'd missed them in a game at the start of last season when we were... The problem with the start of last season was we still had that massive hangover from Derby in the playoffs, and there was the games against Swansea and then Derby themselves where we kind of repeated those things, conceding late goals and silly, giving silly things away and not taking our chances was the big thing. And if he'd had that first half performance last November or last October, it would have been a very different attitude. I mean, he would have had to score at least three in the second half to even make up for it. Now, just let him have another go in the second half. It's fine.
And the first Premier League hat-trick since Viduka at Charlton in 2003. We're going to do hat-tricks, actually, on the extra ball that we are recording later on this week. So keep an eye out for that. It was an incredibly dominant second half, actually. We refer often to the bar charts that SofaScore do, which are great, which shows the attacking momentum and the strength of the attacks as well for home versus the away side. And we absolutely rinsed them looking at this. It's all the away team, which was us on Friday. Wave after wave after wave in that second half, and really strong attacks at that. 60% possession, 27 shots versus their 12. 20 of those from inside the box. Comprehensive win in the end.
It's odd. It's the wrong thing to do, everyone would say, to come up to the Premier League and do this. You're meant to keep it tight and try and win your home games against other lower half teams, and you take a point at Villa and that's meant to be a nice thing. And instead, we got 1-0 up and then we didn't think, well, let's try and hold this, or, you know, if they equalise, that's fine too. We just went and kept scoring, and it looked like if we were still playing now, Jack Harrison would still be running and still trying to score. It was relentless, and it was great. And you could tell Villa I don't think they were fit enough to cope with it, and that they just got really fed up with having to deal with us because we're a pain in the arse.
At the risk of sounding like Alex Ferguson, it's only Aston Villa and it's only Matty Cash, Tyrone Mings. I don't even know what a John McGinn is. It's the same lot that stayed up in the Premier League by a goal last year. Why not just attack the fuck out of them? It's absolutely fine. And the only time they really got into the game, because they did have a decent spell before half-time, but looking back at that, we sort of let them do it. Stuart Dallas seemed to just sort of give up on being a footballer for about 5 minutes, where he's just booting the ball square, like a half volley across the penalty area along the ground to their player. It's like, is Stuart Dallas all right? And Cott gave them the ball a couple of times, and Luke Ayling, although he got back to clear that chance for Grealish off the line, he'd given them the ball in the first place. So we just had like a 5-10 minute spell before half time where it was almost like, should we give them a chance? We've been on top in this game. Let's at least give them something to cling to. And maybe it was deliberate. Maybe that meant at half time Dean Smith should go, well, there you are, lads, you've got them. Go out and do that in the second half. Whereas in the second half we're like, no more just giving them the ball, Stewie. Give Leeds players the ball and keep it.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to Villa this year, because they've
relegated.
Well, it almost wouldn't be completely surprising still, would it? I know they've had a brilliant start, and I think they are quite a decent side now with Barkley and Grealish. They've got quite a lot of threat, and I think Watkins is a good signing as well. But when we were watching it, I said, is Tyrone Mings actually any good? Because I'm not completely sure he is. Like, I've seen him, he looks like he'd be a good defender because he's very tall and strong looking and he's fairly quick. But then you saw him for Bamford's goals and you think, he's kind of shit. He should be stopping those shots, or at least trying to, whereas as it was, the third one in particular, Bamford is quite strongly left-footed and he just showed him straight onto his left foot and almost pointed at a top corner for him and was like, well, if you can hit it there, that'll go in. So you fancy it? Oh, you've done it. Brilliant.
I don't think they win any more games at all this season. They've surprised themselves against Liverpool and then back down to earth, and then they'll spend the rest of the season sort of crawling along on the bellies, trying to get back on the feet, and then they'll play Leeds again and would kick them in the face.
Already got more points than Derby did that season, though.
Yes, I keep seeing the Derby thing, like the worst ever Premier League thing, and I'm glad it's there, because the worst ever top flight performance before then was Leeds for about 50 years. So I'm quite grateful for Derby in that respect for taking the heat off us, or at least our 1945 version.
Do you know what we haven't spoken about yet at all, either on the match ball or this? I don't think we spoke about it on the match ball anyway. Strike. the fact that he was hooked after 20 minutes, we didn't really spend any major time on it. And that goes to show how much we've all kind of just bought in and understand the Bielsa philosophy. It's like, oh yeah, okay. He was on a yellow card. He was in danger of being sent off. Yeah, just took him off. And yeah, it's fine.
Funnily enough, if you open the pages of the Yorkshire Evening Post today, Tuesday, by the time this is out, it'll be all over. That's what I've written about. And exactly that, that it's just normal. And even to the point that if you'd taken Jamie Shackleton off again with about 10 minutes left, we all just would have been fine, not a problem. And kind of, it is interesting how we've just got on board with all that stuff and we're just used to it now. And I imagine a scenario in which Bielsa is managing a 21-year-old Frank Lampard and takes him off after 20 minutes and has Uncle Larry on the phone. Because Struyck didn't look happy, and it didn't help that he had that long walk around the pitch, bless him. But everybody knows the score now at Leeds.
It happens to Calvin Phillips, and he turned out all right, didn't he? And I think it was made to not be a talking point by the fact that Jamie Shackleton came on and just did really well. And there was never any point where you thought there's a real hole in that position now, even though he did it in a very different way and the team played in probably a slightly different way than we would have done had he stayed on. It all just worked, so fine.
There were two quite big changes as it ended up. Matches Click covering for Calvin Phillips, which I don't think we've ever seen before. Fine, no problems whatsoever. I thought he was really good from there with his sort of bringing a little bit more attacking imagination and engine to it, like in terms of the speed that Click does things at than Phillips does. And then Shackleton doing Click's job, not really any difference, was there? It was just Click without a beard. It's absolutely fine. And there is a, you know, if we're that good, because I think that's in the top five second half performances under Bielsa. So what do we even need Calvin Phillips for? Liam Cooper, just sit on the bench and watch.
It is a nice problem to have to repeat that phrase. Well, let's find out what they thought. This section is called Propaganda, which is also the title of the daily email you get as well if you're a TSB Plus subscriber. Plug, plug. Now, this is quite a long one. We're going to start with the thoughts of the Villa podcast, and it goes north of 3 minutes, does this. But it's worth it because it has everything in it. And just so you know, there is music at the start. That's not your phone going crazy or music playing. They're talking over this emotional bed that sounds a little bit like the script. Here you go.
I don't think I could imagine a worse way to spend any night than watch Patrick fucking Bamford score 3 goals against your team. Jesus Christ, Patrick Bamford scored a hat-trick and he missed 2 sitters.
I was certain we were going to lose to Liverpool and I accepted it. And I wasn't as worried about Leicester. Leicester, who were, until they collapsed, were in the Champions League last year. I was more worried about this game on the horizon. I don't know why. Maybe it was just because I really didn't want to fucking lose to Leeds United. I don't know. Maybe I just knew. Maybe I knew it was coming. Maybe I knew they were going to be too aggressive, too up for it after the debacle of 2 years ago. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I just was not looking forward to it, and I was proved right. It was a fucking disaster.
Let's talk Tyrone Mings. The lifting up of Patrick Bamford with one hand, I did enjoy that because Patrick Bamford is an unlikable character and he's probably been a bit of a twat to Tyrone Mings all game. And he stood on his ankle, then he probably did hurt himself in hindsight as well. But I just like Mings getting up, grabbing him by the scruff of the neck and saying, lift yourself off the ground, you twat.
Well, he should have went over to Stockley Park and grabbed the VAR by the scruff of the neck. Bamford should have been sent off and yellow carded for that. It was unbelievable. It was a red card for stamping on Tyrone Mings, and it was a yellow card for trying to deceive the official. It was fucking terrible. And they're checking for a penalty. They're checking for a penalty. Fine, check for a penalty. Whenever you see that it's not a penalty, what happened? What actually happens there? He stands in Tyrone Mings. So you've seen that because you've seen it's not a penalty. So what did he do? Not that it fucking mattered anyway. Villa were shite.
But there was 4 of them standing watching Bamford just caress the ball into the net. Like, one of you's put on a foot. Patrick Bamford can't skin you. He's not that type of player. It's not any game. Somebody put on a foot there. He's not going to nick it away from you. Fucking block him. He's about to shoot. He's on 2 goals already. He's loving this. He's rubbing this into Romang's face. He's going to shoot. There's no secret here. Block the fucking shot.
And forward for every attack. So there's space there. Like, there's nothing but space. Leeds are going to be spanked a few times this season. Make no mistake about that. I mean, they're really well coached. They're really aggressive. They're really adventurous. But the players are shit. They only look good because they're all getting each other out of holes because they're 15 men. Sorry, there's 11 men available whenever you've got the ball, because they're all just sprinting into position for you. This, like, watching Leeds really makes you wonder what the fuck everybody else is doing.
I actually thought, how simple is football that a team can come along and just be a bit fitter than everybody, like, or become much fitter so much quicker? And it's like you blew everybody else out of the water. Leeds, you want to storm through the Premier League. Now, I know they've obviously got a good coach as well, but they're just way above everybody else. Surely, at this level, everybody should be the same fitness.
It's mad. It's absolutely mad. And this really helped Liverpool, you know, over the last 2 years as well. They've slightly adapted their system now because people were sitting in against them. And people will eventually just sit in against Leeds, and that will stop them as well. But, like, yeah, it's so noticeable that it's almost comical.
I mean, that was great. That did have everything. Only downside, those Brummie accents, though, really go through you, don't they?
There was an element with that of almost brotherhood of podcasts. I felt all the pain. I imagine I probably sound as much of a biased, one-eyed idiot screaming about Jack Grealish as they do about Pat Bamford. But I like Pat Bamford, and he didn't dive. I think that penalty thing with Tyrone Mings, that he should have had a red card and a yellow card and probably a fine and a ban and had his pets confiscated and whatever else they want to happen. We were watching it on, what was it? On the television.
Yep, it was on the television, Moscow, correct.
And Stephen Warnock was doing the co-commentary, and there are times when you want to defer to the opinion of a professional footballer. And I think if Stephen Warnock looks at that and just goes, oh yeah, actually he's just caught his studs in the turf, there's nothing in that, he's probably hurt himself. Fine, I'll take his... Players can see what players do. He didn't stamp on Tyrone Mings. He didn't fake an injury. He didn't do any of that kind of stuff. And there's a theme of that with some of the Villa stuff that with Tyrone Mings as well. And I put it in the Matchroom report that Tyrone Mings reacted to Bamford as if he's never actually seen Jack Grealish play. He watches him every single match do that kind of thing, but actually diving. Go and grab him by the scruff of the neck and throw him in the river.
It makes me love Patrick Bamford more when I hear these reactions.
Definitely.
About how he comes across to other fans.
Yeah.
He's nothing like that either, is he? He's an
unlikable character.
Like, I imagine other fans don't watch him speak and stuff and see, like, training ground footage and all the stuff that we do as Leeds fans, but he comes across as a really nice guy.
All the criticism we've ever given him, I've never thought that he's anything other than nice. Of course he's a nice person. Just doesn't score enough goals in the Championship. He's waiting to be in the Premier League. But this unlikable character being a twat to Tyrone Mings. What do they think he was doing to Tyrone Mings whole game?
Part of the criticism I saw of him online, you know, when he scored, it might have been the hat-trick goal, I can't remember, but he did the Z symbol, which turned out to be a lightning bolt. I saw some Birmingham fans online claiming that it was to do with Zulus, which is their hooligan firm, and he was winding them up. And it's just like... No, he was promoting an ethical brand.
He's a fan of the film Zorro. Everybody knows that.
But who in their right mind thinks fucking Patrick Bamford is piling into 70s and 80s hooligan beef? Like, he's been watching DVDs of it at home that he's bought off the market. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to fucking show them when I score against Villa.
Goes to show, doesn't it, as well, that Tyrone Mings risking a booking and a sending off actually himself, because he'd already been booked by that point, hadn't he? Lifting Patrick Bamford up by the shirt is their highlight from that game. Delicious.
I did quite enjoy the hopelessness of their grief with it though as well. Because they're like, not that it fucking mattered anyway. Sure, we were beaten anyway.
The key line is that we're well coached and very aggressive, but our players are shit.
They're not either. They're not shit. They're good players, some of them. And some of them, which I don't know if some people might view this as cheating, some of them have been made loads better by coaching. But now are permanently better.
Don, have you heard as well the rumour that when you put like 11 players together in what's known as a team, that actually that's what's important?
Oh, like a collective effort?
Yeah, it's the collective effort of what's known as a team.
Oh, okay.
That determines the outcome, and that therefore is what kind of influenced this. It wasn't that our players are shit, it's that our team is fucking great.
And the fitness thing is genuinely interesting as well. I think we've become quite used to Stuart Dallas just being a 24/7 combustion engine. Seeing it through an Aston Villa fan's eyes, and it's, you know, why aren't Aston Villa as fit as Leeds United? It's a good question. Why are Leeds United the only club in the Premier League doing double sessions, triple sessions, whatever Marcelo Bielsa is making them do? It seems like the only team that is coming close to us on any of this is Huddersfield Town, and that's only because they've got the son of Bielsa doing his work there. So we are, unless the panic in these Villa fans' voices is acted upon and other clubs get their act together and train their players properly, the next 10 years is just going to be West Yorkshire dominance. It's going to be Leeds United and Huddersfield Town at the top of the Premier League, the Champions League, the World Club Cup, trying to decide who is the best team in the world, and everybody else will just be also-rans.
The answer is us. Let's move on to somebody else then. Have we had this young lad on before?
Yes, briefly. I always feel bad because he's...
It's a child.
It is a child, but he came to our attention when Jack Grealish didn't get in the England squad, and we basically broadcast the sound of a very big sigh. And this felt like part two of the very big sigh. And it's a reminder as well that the Aston Villa thing, everyone kind of wondered where this beef with Villa has come from. And obviously the hatred for Bamford is, well, it comes through clearly here. But he for a young lad, he's got a long memory. He has not forgiven Fabian Delph.
Yeah, well, did you say that? Did you say that then? About Bamford, honestly, I hype, yeah, 100%, mate, I hype Bamford more than Delph, 100%, 1,000,000%, I hype Delph, but Bamford just tops it, honestly, right, he's such a diver, oh, mate, yeah, he's such a diver, Bamford is, he scored, he's actually just scored.
That's superb. Yeah, he's dishing out kids' words like, he's toxic. Like, it's like the kids playing Fortnite and stuff, all describing each other as toxic, and then we have a teen rage at the end. That's superb.
It's 2015 that Fabian Delph left Aston Villa for Manchester City. I'd completely forgotten about all that, but this lad obviously has a long memory. He also has a very strange view. That was his live stream, and then after the game, he calmed down a bit, but not much about Patrick Bamford, and he's. He's got a very weird view of what Marcelo Bielsa's tactics are.
First half, specifically, that all I did was literally kick and dive or everywhere. I think that's genuinely the game plan that they set out to play, and it worked and they won, so fair play to Leeds.
I know we spoke there about bias, Moscow, but to suggest that we kicked and dived feels a little bit strong in my opinion, particularly when their captain, look at Jack.
He doesn't kick. Just dives, it's better.
He's the most fouled player in Premier League history by a distance. That's how special he is, we've got to remember that. I'd previously softened a bit on Grealish until I saw him play again. I think maybe I'd seen highlights of him and I'd seen him doing some good stuff, and then I'd seen him briefly in an England shirt, and you don't mind it as much then. But when it's actually facing your team, Christ is an unlikable character.
And he was crap as well.
Well, I mean, the bit where he ran the length of the pitch and...
Yeah, that was the one bit. I mean, I know you can give too much weight to kind of algorithmic scores, but SofaScore had him at 5.6 for his contribution, which is the worst. No, nobody else got less than 6 on that pitch. Even Pascal Struyck got 6.5, and he was only on for 20 minutes. But yeah, he did nothing. Although there's an interesting view from our young friend who's, we leave his name off this purposely because don't go chasing kids to give them abuse on the internet. It's fine. We've all been young. We've all punched a table when we've conceded a goal, but we've never thought this about the man of the match.
I think obviously most players were woeful for Villa today, but our man of the match, without a shadow of a doubt, has to go to Matty Cash. He was absolutely phenomenal. He was our best player 100%, without a shadow of a doubt. He bullied Jack Harrison in some senses. Like, yeah, the amount of tackles he made, he was just the best player on the pitch for Villa, obviously. You know, we don't want to speak about Patrick Bamford because I'll rant again, but yeah.
Ah, the naivety of youth, yes. 27 chances was it that we had, and he bullied Jack Harrison.
I cannot understand how he's watched that and seen Jack Harrison running past Cash over and over again and thought, doing well there.
To be fair, you know, again, not picking on a youngster, listening to a lot of the Villa fans responding to this, they all seem to think Matt Cash had a decent match.
Who the fuck did they playing at fullback before?
Well, we mentioned on James Bree, who went on loan to Luton. I don't know what's become of him. I don't know what their history of... I mean, they had Steve Staunton back in the day. I don't know if they're longing for that kind of class. But yeah, I mean, Harrison had 5 crosses. I looked before, 5 key passes, which means he set up 5 chances. You can't say the winger has set up 5 chances. Our fullback had a good game though, didn't he?
Bullied him. Maybe he was just saying mean things about his hairline or something.
There was a lot of quite reasonable stuff out there. There are too many reasonable people. I think that's why I actually enjoyed those lads at the start, the Villa Talk podcast. It was very real, and I liked it tremendously. I also quite liked, we can tell people, AVFC vlogger on YouTube is also a very young lad, but he has the good sense to edit down his recording of himself watching the match and just put out the interesting bit. And it is actually very good. If he keeps it up, we'll probably end up seeing him on Match of the Day or something. And I hope if he does end up on Match of the Day that he's still got his mum interjecting in the background and still has him flopping backwards on the sofa in despair when Villa concede. But this is his reaction when Grealish did have that one good thing that he did. But it's really here for the sound effect for Meslier's save from the corner afterwards.
Long Jack, shoot! Just shoot the ball! Oh my God!
4 years
ago, Jack Grealish is just ran. He ran past about five players, got all the lead players on their arse, and then just didn't shoot for ages. Gone past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Leeds defenders, and then it's just done the worst finish ever. Just shoot the ball, man. Shoot, Barkley, into the box. What a save! Was that Konsa or Mings? Konsa with a really good shot, really good cross from Barkley, and what a save from that guy.
That's very Sky Sports, is that? It's good.
I think every time Meslier makes a save, there should be some kind of...
Watching that Grealish chance back, he really should have shot early. Or at one point, he could have passed to Watkins, who stood right at the side of him, who would have had a really easy finish. But he's a greedy twat.
And he gave us the chance for...
Kaboom.
In our goal. And yeah, this is him at 3-0. I enjoy just the enthusiastic response to Villa losing. He's quite accurate in his assessment of what the problems are for Villa.
Where's Barkley? Where's McGinn? They just get all the space they want, and that's why we're losing, and we don't deserve to be getting anything out of this game so far. Actually, Rodrigo's got the mountains of space to Costa, to Bamford, who dribbles past three of our defenders and sticks it in the top left corner.
We're playing exactly the same every time.
What is going on with this team, man? Yes, that's a really, really good goal from Bamford, but so much space. So much space. Oh, for God's sake. Rodrigo's got more than enough space. Costa gets all the time in the world. Bamford, he's got three defenders on him and he still managed to get a shot away. Not been our day at all. Look, boom, boom, boom. No one tackles him. It's actually a really good finish.
They're all just crowding around him, but just watch his feet.
But, I don't know. Poor 3-0, this game's gone.
I thought he was going to burst into the Wenger boys then.
He reminds me of, do you remember that Rotherham fan who came and did a vlog at Elland Road and spent most of it just talking about how brilliant Leeds were, and then you started seeing him doing more and more Leeds games. Not too late to change, lad. Not too late to change.
We should say happy birthday to Phil Hay on this podcast. It was quite a big birthday for him this week, which means he's away. Lazy so-and-so, that's what he is. Hopefully we'll be catching up with him on the Phil Hay Show, our podcast that we do for The Athletic later on this week. In the meantime, do check out the guy, the man of the moment, and Patrick Bamford. Phil did a bit of a deep dive on him and his past clubs and some of the horrible things that people have said about Pat Bamford in the past, including, was it Crystal Palace? Was it Pardew who was responsible for sending him over into the group of right-footers instead of the left-footers? I mean, what a cruel, cruel way to show you don't give a shit about a footballer.
I mean, Sean Dyche made him eat worms, so it could have been worse.
You can read all Phil's stuff on The Athletic, plus loads of football and sports coverage from around the world. And right now, it's £1 a month. Details at theathletic.co.uk/thesquareball.
Happy 50th, Phil.
He's staying forever. Oh, God. So pleased. Bielsa, I'm very comfortable living and managing in England. He mentioned in his presser recently, didn't he? Annual contract doesn't mean that I'm not open to staying here for longer. Well, that's good news. I like that news.
It was a little bit of hope we needed. I think we were all fearing that we'd never see him again in the flesh in Elland Road. But if he can give us another season, we'll get to see him at least a bit.
Champions League, isn't it, next year? So he's going to want to manage in that.
I am also very comfortable with Marcelo Bielsa living and managing in England. There's one thing that me and him have in common. And yeah, it depends what the challenges are, I think, season by season. What's the expectation? How's it gone? And yeah, there doesn't need to be a time limit on it. Just stay forever as long as there's something interesting. We may get to the point where we have to be like, well, we're really going to go for the Johnston's paint this year because just he wants to win a cup. But I'm fine with that.
In anything he needs to be more comfortable in England, drops the line.
He doesn't want anything, does he? He's happy with a tiny flat. being cut off from his family.
This is all I deserve.
Yeah.
The thing with it up to this point is that because it's only ever been an annual contract and it's been ace every year so far. I mean, I know the first year ended badly. Second year ended quite well. And this year, obviously, going to end with spectacular success. It's always felt like a holiday romance in that you know you've got to go home at some point and all this will be over and you probably won't see each other again.
It's not completely new news. It's good to have him saying this, but there was the hint from Angus Kinnear after we'd got promoted, so I suppose it was very easy to say it then, but he said that if we hadn't gone up last season, he wasn't ruling out that Bielsa could have been convinced into or would have been up for another go. There does seem to be something about the way Bielsa has settled in Leeds and the way the work is going. And we've said before that there's probably a lot of credit to Kinnear and Radrizzani and Orta for actually keeping the most demanding manager in club football, somebody who walked out of Lazio after 4 days, who spent his first season at Marseille criticising his own club president. I've always referred to it as my favourite photograph of Bielsa. I think of him laying into the president of Marseille at a press conference when he's just about to start the first season as Marseille coach, and their press officer is in the background with her head in her hands. Just, oh my God. We've had none of that. There's obviously been bumpy stuff behind the scenes, and we know Radrizzani wasn't happy about the Spygate stuff, but they've sorted it all out, kept it going, kept him in job, and kept him feeling like he is doing something here that's worth continuing with. And I think that was always the difference. When he did finally give up at Marseille, it was more broken promises, so what's the point in carrying on? Lazio, he turns up, they haven't done anything he'd asked for, so what's the point in carrying on? Whereas here, there always seems to be, no, this can grow, this can develop, we can win the Champions League.
Just hand the whole club over to him, because then he'll always be happy, won't he? If you say you can run everything, he's going to have to obviously have a few more hours to sort catering contracts and stuff, but he'll do it, and he'll do a good job of it.
I think they're not far off having done that. I would wager that they're all bloody terrified of him.
I mean, he sorted the car park out, for one thing. I think, and that was, I mean, it's sort of related to football, that he thought the players were coming in a bad mood because they were trying to find a parking space. So it got sorted out from that. But it's, I think he's got the right balance of, you know, he wants a running track. They put in a running track and he wants this, and it happens. And if it can't happen, like the whole Daniel James, Shea Adams stuff, there were good reasons for it. He understood why it didn't happen. So it was all fine. It all seems worryingly healthy.
And he likes the under-23s, and there's some great prospects in there, as we saw from the lineup in the previous game. Young lad by the name of Hernandez, who played. He looks quite handy.
It was a fine choice there to put him as the lead picture for it as well on the social media poster. I mean, Pablo, for his many qualities, he's not a young-looking man, is he? He's got the eyes of a someone who's seen things and lived a life. And there he is with under-23 written right underneath his very old face.
It did momentarily raise hopes and expectations that perhaps we had regenerated a young version of Pablo Hernandez. This is what, like, Adam Forshaw comes clanking out of the physio room and it's Pablo Hernandez's head stuck on top and metal hips. But no, just same old Pablo. But it was Rafinha, really, who seemed to, let's say the under-23 seems to be a level he doesn't struggle with.
He looked really good, didn't he? Very, very encouraged by that.
Just piss-taking. I mean, it's probably not the way you're supposed to take it. Mark Jackson did an interview afterwards where he's like, oh, very pleased with the attitude shown by the senior players coming down to the under-23s. Rafinha just took the piss for 90 minutes, but if that's what he wants to do, you know, he created some chances. He scored. 2-0 win, beat Norwich. Have that, you fucking mustard-eating pricks.
It wasn't even, I mean, in a way, we were quite kind. We didn't play Meslier in net. We didn't play Jamie Shackleton. This was a weakened team.
Could we actually play our first team in the under-23s in terms of ages? We can't be far off, can we? Because who's old? Well, I suppose, yeah, Ayling.
You have to get Ayling and Dallas out, probably.
Click
but
as well. Click's quite an old man. He just doesn't look it.
You could play, certainly, I think you could probably assemble like a reasonable championship team, though, out of our under-23s now, which is quite a step up. And it's nice that we have, because the under-23s have stepped up to a much harder division this year because of our changing category for the academy. And it's going well. Are we third or something in that league now? So, good. Let's get promoted and win the next one.
Easy. Just to look through the injuries, obviously, Pablo coming back from his lack of playing time. Cooper, back anytime soon? Llorente, they said, 3 weeks? And that was a couple of weeks ago. So, there seem to be hints in the press chatter anyway that we might see one or if not both of them back by the time we get round to Leicester. on Monday.
And then Bielsa wasn't happy about this this idea that Calvin Phillips would be out for 6 weeks. And there was, he was almost going to go off at Adam Pope. Where did you get this information? And yeah, this coming out the little laptop speaker. It's the information we got from the club. Marcelo. So he had to settle his anger and then go and find out who's putting this this scurrilous story out. But as we've discovered, don't need him.
Adam Forshaw as well, on the cusp of a comeback.
Don't need him either.
As he has been for the last year. Poor Adam Forshaw. Oh.
One day he'll be back.
Quick word if we can then on pay-per-view, because there's a meeting on Tuesday to decide the future of that. Seems to have backfired. Seems to have raised a lot of money for charity in the meantime, which is good news.
I mean, has this happened yet?
The meeting?
Yeah. Isn't it happening now?
Is this the meeting? Us three? I think we should. I vote we scrap it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Put all the games live on Channel 4.
And give Quest some.
Get the Football Italia production team to come in and do it. And that would be absolutely fine. I didn't see this, but Sky were hosting a debate, basically putting the boot in to say that pay-per-view on Sky is terrible. I don't know if they're completely going with the way the wind is blowing, or maybe they are moving into, because the football is so expensive, they are just going to become. When is Sky debate launching? Because the Scum Chelsea match was only in live, and the only interesting part of that was Patrice Evra and Jimmy Hasselbank just sticking the boot into each other for 10 minutes after the match. Much more interesting watching them two argue than watching Man United players actually try to play football. So maybe they'll come out of this meeting saying, we're not going to put football on the television anymore. We're just going to have arguments about it, which, to be fair, talk sport on television, isn't it?
It's more entertaining than a lot of the Premier League is at the minute anyway, because all these games are bollocks compared to watching Leeds, aren't they? No coincidence that we've been put up for the telly against what, Arsenal and Everton as well in the next sort of month or two. So by my reckoning, we're going to have been in, I think, 7 of our, because you're guaranteed a minimum 10 TV appearances in the UK as part of the TV contract. We'll have hit 7 before Christmas, if not more, maybe 8 or 9, I think, by that point, if we assume that, like, say, Man United's going to be on telly and Chelsea as well. So once you get past 10, then it's an extra £1.2 million per game that you're on. And the top team, I think, last year was the Liverpool. We're on about 26, 27 times. So assuming we get north of 20 across the season, there should be some nice money in this for the club.
Which is a nice change, whereas in the Football League, you got
10 pence, wasn't it?
It was not much, was it? It generally didn't cover anything.
It was £100,000 per home game and then £10,000 per away game.
And as has been pointed out, Pat Bamford did score more than any other team apart from Leeds United over the weekend. And it's funny, having waited for so long to get into the Premier League, because we played on Friday night, I just ignored the rest of the Premier League, didn't care. It was like being back in the Championship again, as if we'd played Aston Villa on Friday night. And then the rest of the weekend is kind of like, oh, West Ham City. No, I mean, Fulham, Crystal Palace, no question. Scum v Chelsea, tried watching it, couldn't, too hard. Liverpool, Sheffield United, unless Brian Deane and Bruce Grobbelaar are playing, it's not good. Southampton versus Everton, just they should null and void that. Wolves against Newcastle. Well, Wolves beat us last week, so don't want to see them play. Arsenal against Leicester, it would just be, I mean, that's just Cockneys arguing in the end. Brighton against West Brom is a League One fixture. Burnley versus Tottenham is an FA Cup final from 1952. So no reason to watch any of that, and there isn't another game. There's no other fixtures until Monday night in the Premier League.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Monday night is our next game then, and we've got Leicester City, who have cheeky swines snuck ahead of us in the table. They've gone up to fourth. They've won at Man City and Arsenal. However, they've lost at home to West Ham and Villa, so it's hard to know what to expect from them, really, isn't it?
I don't feel as worried as I probably should, given they've been a really good team for several years now. I think we can run more than them. That's what I took from the Aston Villa game. We're very good at running.
But that's all you do. That's all Leeds do. They just run.
My concern is that they might sit back and just hit a ball over the top and Jamie Vardy will score. That's how they'll beat us if they do. But I think we'll be all right.
That's pretty much how they beat Manchester City. And I was reading about them on The Athletic. Whoever the guy is who does their tactics. Tom Warville, there you go. He's good at maths. So I was reading what he had to say about Leicester, and they're a lot less exciting. It's basically the thing. They're not doing as much. The fullbacks are boring now. They used to be exciting. They used to be good, but they've left, and they sit back and they don't press as much. So all the things that kind of made it sound like we should be able to beat them because they won't be trying to take the ball off us as much, but then also raise that spectre of championship teams sitting back and watching.
It kind of has a Wolves vibe to it, this one for me. Whereas I was quite confident going into Villa, but I always felt there was just a bit of a red flag against the Wolves game in that they'd might just be able to sneak something from us. I mean, as it was, we had the run of Wolves for a lot of it, but by not scoring, we kind of found ourselves in that position where we're vulnerable to a goal on the counter, and they did. And I think Leicester, I think they present a similar sort of threat in that regard, but I think we've got enough in this one. It could, because we're still kind of trying to find our way through this division, aren't we? That's the thing.
Much as I said with Villa, it'll be interesting to see where they actually finish. It's still not completely clear where we're going to finish. We've had a very good start, and I think our performance would suggest we can be aiming certainly for mid-table. But, I mean, Leicester have done it over a much longer period of time now, and I think we probably should take them fairly seriously, because they are legitimately one of the best sides in the Premier League and have been for a while now, so... It's just that so far this season, if Jamie Vardy hasn't scored, they've not really looked all that good. So I think we should injure him early and that'll be fine.
They won the Premier League, didn't they? I didn't dream that.
Happened, definitely did.
Yeah, and a lot of those players have gone, but they somehow still seem to be okay. We've only come up against Brendan Rodgers once. It's strange, and it was a long, long time ago, 10-11, Swansea. They beat us and we beat them. So draw your own conclusions from that, ladies and gentlemen.
Did you ever see the documentary of him when he was at Liverpool? I can't remember what it was called. I think it was an American thing, but it was on Channel 5. He was very Brent in it. He was not. It didn't come across well. And there's a bit of it when he was at home with his wife, who he has since left now, where he almost seemed to apologise for her not being as attractive as you might imagine. He sort of went, oh, this is my wife. We've been together. We've been together for years. As in, she's from before. She's moving before all this money and stuff, looking for a change, probably. And he got one.
I could do well now and get myself a trophy wife.
Exactly. I could get my teeth done, which again he has sorted out since then as well.
Quick word on Jamie Vardy and presenting the major threat. Me and my dad had a WhatsApp conversation about this last night, and it took three attempts to get to the name. He came out as Verdi, Varadi, and then upon my third prompting, we managed to get there. Vardy.
I share his pain, because obviously there's the Luke Varney confusion, but since Leicester City have been a popular football team that they show on the television, they have that Telemann in midfield, who I always confuse with George Philippe Telemann, the German Baroque composer.
Ah, from I confuse them as well.
All the bloody time. Sick of it.
He was the musical director of the five main churches in Hamburg after 1721. And then I wonder...
What are the five main ones?
Well, I mean, there's the cathedral, obviously, for a start.
I'll come back to that, but I was going to say what he...
Das Kathedral.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you them all, though.
What he has in common with... well, I hope he doesn't have in common with Brendan Rodgers, is his second wife, whose extramarital affairs and large gambling debts were accumulated before leaving him in the lurch. I don't know if that's why Rodgers brought him into midfield. It's kind of a kindred spirit.
How do you think this one's going to go? I fancy home win.
Are we at home or away?
We're at home.
Forget now that it's just generic, silent television coverage.
Yeah, why not? Let's have another win.
That's a bit optimistic for you.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
3-2.
We can maybe catch them. I mean, they're playing AEK Athens before they play us. That's got to be Thursday night, is it? So they're doing the Thursday-Monday version of UEFA Cup play. WhoScored.com tell me that their strengths include stealing the ball. So they could all be in jail before we play them. And they're very weak at stopping opponents from creating chances. And as we've seen, Bambinho just needs a couple now. And he'll. I think it's going to be another hat-trick. Bambinho versus Schmeichel. Put the poor man's Erling Haaland in his place.
Also poor at defending counter-attacks, which we showed we're very good at.
Yeah, I think we'll absolutely bollocks these. It's going to be fine. They'll be knackered from Greece. It's away, the Athens match as well. Schmeichel, he's always uncomfortable playing against Leeds because we're mean to him because of his dad. Yes, and their midfielder is a composer who's still trying to pay off his wife's gambling debts from the 16th century. Or the 17th, I don't know, I always get confused. 1700s.
That's the 18th century.
Right. Then I knew I was wrong.
As we continue to make the Premier League better, we're offering solutions to fix it once and for all. Never mind Project Big Picture, we're sorting it out properly here on the Square Ball podcast. We're picking out the problems one per week in this bit. It's called What's Wrong with the Premier League? What is wrong with the Premier League this week?
It's funny you mention the Project Big Picture because I saw bits of scum on Chelsea. Crap on it. No, neither of them have got any class through the squad, the manager, the club as a whole. No ideas on the pitch, just terrible, boring football. So I'm going to suggest we need to start separating off the chaff and the top six breakaway. So that's us, along with Everton, Liverpool, Villa, Leicester, Southampton. We might as well go alone. Just cut them off. They can go and play. I mean, they need to be playing teams like Burnley more. They shouldn't be getting the same share of TV money as actual entertaining clubs like us. So I think it's only fair we cut them off.
We are adding more value to the Premier League than they are, aren't we? Definitely. So you're absolutely right. Give us more of the money. Pull up the drawbridge. Give us all the money.
And they've set the precedent because this is what they wanted. So it's only fair that they would stick by it now, I think, and they'd have to accept that it was a good idea then. It's a good idea now. Unfortunately, they're just on the wrong side of it.
As I was saying before, you saw this weekend what a Premier League without Leeds United is like. It was rubbish. I don't know a single person who watched any of it. Viewing figures, zero. Whether it's pay-per-view, whether it was free-to-air, whether it was shown in people's back gardens. The only people who made any money from that were curtain salesmen. The only thing I don't like about the solution to this is that we're in a league with Leicester and Southampton, and that's League One to me. And if it's that, then we either find some better teams, maybe some European teams that we like, not PSV because they always beat us, Maritimo, get them over, and it means then we go to, which was the island they were from?
Madeira?
Yes. So Wine, Lee Sharp, all the things you want from a football match. It's either that or we really embrace the League One thing and we get some teams from down there who we liked playing, but I can't think of any. Huddersfield, do we get them involved? I mean, they're going to be playing better football than anybody else soon, aren't they? So may as well have them. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
85 years they've been doing law at Levi Solicitors, so they're quite good at it by now, and they're completely transparent on their fees. They've got loads of services, both for you and for your business. So if you've got wills and probate issues, residential conveyancing for the individual, even personal dispute resolution, they'll take care of that for you. For your business as well, there's commercial dispute resolution as well, licensing issues and debt recovery, any of those, plenty more listed on their website, and a 10% discount for you too. For going through us, head to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. We wrap up the podcast with Heroes and Villains, the final part of the show, and we start off with the Ken Bates Villainy Award. That's the first one that we do in this section. Ken Bates has to have the opening nomination. What's he done this week? Anything?
Well, no, but in a week where Marcus Rashford's been trying to feed children and there's been lots of debate around that, it's worth always remembering that Ken Bates, he didn't want to stop at not feeding them. He didn't want them to have water either, did he? It was it WaterAid, the charity that he was criticising, or was it just the general concept of children being able to drink?
Yes, it was about sending water to Africa, and he just thought it shouldn't be done.
Yeah, do feed and water kids. It's probably for the best. If we can manage to do that between us, I think we'll be all right.
If you can do it for a plant, you can do it for a child.
Tell me I'm wrong.
A fine motto to carry through life with you there, Moscow. Thank you. Gabby Agbonlahor's obviously been gobbing off. Gobby Agbonlahor, if we're going to rechristen him. He's been made to look like a proper twat this week, and I've enjoyed that a great deal. I almost don't want to nominate him for villainy, but we kind of have to.
Well, he's gone down that route now, hasn't he? Been like, oh, fishing, rattled, rent-free. It's the standard thing. It happens all the time.
He made a bizarre claim that having Gabby Agbonlahor say things about us is part of being a big club, as if it's part of like a ritual of growing up. He said, well, Liverpool and Man City fans, they don't get annoyed about what Gabby Agbonlahor says. So if you want to be a big club, you've got to learn to ignore me. And that's basically what this whole thing is like. Oh, Leeds fans, how can they be so upset about something I've said? Why are they listening to me? If he wants us to ignore him, the easiest way to do it is to shut the fuck up. Because I was ignoring Gabriel Agbonlahor without even realising it every day of my life. And that made me happy. And apparently it made him happy. So we could both be happy if he just fucked off.
But instead he's fucked off to Sky Sports and TalkSport, and he's baiting the line, as the phrase, it's the emoji, isn't it? The fishing emoji brought to life is Gabby Agbonlahor.
We are recording on Tuesday afternoon, and before I walked down here, I noticed he was on TalkSport with Danny Mills. And they were setting up, it was basically after the break, it will be Leeds versus Villa, the debate with those two. And they'd already done stuff. It was like, I think the big question was, should Michael Antonio be in the England squad? And it's Danny Mills saying, yes, he should be in there instead of Jack Grealish. And Agbonlahor saying, well, he should be in there instead of Calvin Phillips, shouldn't he? And just, nobody needs this on a Tuesday morning. I mean, we were talking about Telemans before, the classical composer. His music for Recorder is very good, and it's all on Spotify. Listen to that. It'll make you feel a lot better than listening to Gabby Agbonlahor with a Recorder up his ass.
Yeah, it's very one-dimensional, and it should just go away.
Especially if that's what he wants.
He doesn't know, does he? That's the whole point. That's the whole point.
Well, he's a liar then, isn't he? So he's not just a fool, he's a liar.
One of the great things about Agbonlahor was that we kind of picked up on his inability to keep his powder dry, and that's the same for George Galloway, who, after Bamford missed those chances in the first half, tweeted to say, well, actually, do you want to do it in... Is he here, George?
He's very stop-start, isn't he, Galloway? I'm genuinely sorry to say this, but LUFC needs to invest in a striker in January. Bamford, not good enough at this level. Furthermore, the Americans, imperialist Israel supporter, it's probably best if we don't go into his views on that stuff.
I think we best avoid that. Don't know about you.
His views on strikers are poor, anyway, was the main thing. But it's part of being in the Premier League, I suppose, that you see George Galloway commenting on your striker.
It just makes no sense whatsoever. At least, I mean, Gabby Agbonlahor, his name I'm struggling to say, and I can't understand why it's the Gabby part. Let's think of all the Gabbies I know.
It's because your brain's thinking about that second G in his surname. That's what it is. You're thinking ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, I can say Gabby Logan, and that's got a second G.
I thought you'd be a Roslyn man.
There's no second G, but Gabby Roslyn, not a problem. Gabrielle, the singer.
Tell you, we do have a problem with Mickey Apples. What's he playing at?
I think he's going to be a recurring candidate for this. Robbie Gotts, unused sub again.
Robbie Gotts started against Arsenal. Why can't he play for Lincoln?
He should be playing for Lincoln, and Michael Appleton needs to pull his finger out of his arse, doesn't he?
Or we need to sign whoever is playing in midfield for Lincoln, because they've got to be brilliant.
I think it's Liam Brudcut.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Actually.
No, come on, that's got to be lies.
Just to return to the theme of us correcting the Premier League, making it better and being the best team that football's ever seen. Fulham, I want to nominate Fulham, because they're not even trying, are they? Rubbish.
We kind of saw this coming with Scotty Parker. When we were going up against them last year, we were all for Scotty Parker because he was obviously not a good enough manager, despite them having a really good squad. And they now have a comparatively less good squad because they're in a better league and they're fucking terrible. So they're never going to win a game in it. So keep him though. Do keep him. I'm still not at that point of comfort yet where I feel our good start completely insulates us from relegation. So it's good to see some teams willing to sacrifice themselves.
It fucking is Liam Broodcutt as well. He's the captain.
What I do like about what they're doing at the bottom, or not doing rather, is that the bottom three clubs, that's Fulham, Sheffield United and Burnley, have all got 1 point each. West Brom have only got three. And then you're up to Brighton in 16th with 5 points. We've got 10. So we're 9 points clear of the relegation zone already. And that's actually a hell of a lot to make up over a full season. I mean, we've still got 32 games to play, but that's a lot of points to make up.
And the nice thing about being chased by teams at the bottom of the league as well, rather than being chased by teams at the top, is that the ones at the bottom are shit. So they don't get 3 points every week. Whereas when you've got like Brentford or someone good chasing you down, it's like, oh Christ, they've won again, they've won again, they've won again. Whereas, you know, if Fulham put together a good run, it'll be like a win and a draw and then another draw and then two defeats and a win. It's not going to be quite as relentless. So they're already down is what I'm saying.
Just back to Lincoln's midfield. James Jones is also in there as well, who sounds like he would be doing take that covers in a pub. But the other one has the brilliant name. He sounds like he should be a joke in Open All Hours. Connor McGrandles. Connor McGrandles. McGrandles? Connor McGrandles. Unless it's McGrandles.
Just about Brentford. I had no idea where they were in the league. You're talking about good teams. They're shit. They're 11th now. They've played seven. They've won three, drawn one and lost three. They've got 10 points as well, like us. But the difference is we're at the top of the Premier League and they're in the middle of the Sky Bet Championship.
Sold the good players, didn't they? We know from bitter experience that selling your good players makes you worse.
And I've just found that Reading are 5 points clear at the top and suddenly they've become better than us last year, almost.
Mad, isn't it?
Oh, but we would still be up there. Did you see the cumulative league table that just added on points from last season? If it carried on, we were still, without having played any further games in the Championship, we were still in the automatic promotion places.
Brilliant. We should get something for that.
This year's trophy.
Yeah. Steve Nicholl's been at it again. He featured on this show a couple of weeks back with his dour opinion. It was the Man City game, wasn't it? When we were going, you know, toe-to-toe with Man City attacking. Waves of attacking football.
Control. He needs more control.
He was annoyed and he's been spouting off again on ESPN.
It's teamed up. They've put him together head-to-head with Frank Leboeuf, who people may remember him stamping on Harry Kewell back before we didn't endorse that kind of behaviour. And it's hard to pick out who is worse out of this. Nicholl is grudgingly starting to admit that we're playing good football, but I don't know if anybody's heard about this Bielsa burnout concept.
What's that? Hang on a second.
Unless, like Frank Leboeuf, you were watching Olympique Marseille, you may not know what Mr. Bielsa has in his history.
You're telling me, hang on a second, there's a burnout problem.
I'm not telling you. Frank Leboeuf, who has watched Bielsa, he's seen him work, he's telling you.
Even if I enjoy the game, even if I enjoy everything of the game and all the movement of Leeds, even of Aston Villa at the beginning of the game, I know what Mr. Bielsa is capable of. Everybody's going to love him. He's going to be an attraction. He's going to be absolutely fantastic to all Leeds fans. But I have to wait. I have to wait because I've seen that with Olympique Marseille. I've seen six fantastic months and six horrible months from Olympique Marseille. So I want to be optimistic. I want to wish the best to Leeds. I want to hope that what I saw with Marseille is not gonna happen with Leeds. But I've known the past of Mr. Bielsa has always been like that.
I think he's putting that accent on.
It sounds like he's auditioning for Allo Allo.
It's an accent now, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, he was in. I've just looked it up. He was in. He was a doctor in the Stephen Hawking biopic, The Theory of Everything.
I know you're still going to be a great scientist.
I got the bad news for you, mister.
Anyway, Steve Nicholl then chimes in on this. He's very much in agreement.
Is it sustainable over the course of a Premier League season the way Bielsa has this team play?
Well, I would agree with Frank that they look great going forward. The movement is absolutely fantastic. And they only won 3-0 today. And I know Bamford got a hat-trick, but you kind of wonder if they had a couple more accomplished finishers up front, how many goals this team could score. Because they probably may have had 10. They ended up with 3. I mean, that's how good they were going forward. But it's all about the movement and all about the overlapping runs. And basically, it's about everybody running at 100 miles an hour for 90 minutes. I don't think that is sustainable, not over the course of a season. You know, basically what they'll have to do is make sure they've got enough points before they run out of gas, because it doesn't look like they're going to play any other way.
We gave our greatest output last season when all our players were still shit-faced.
I mean, that is the larger point. I'm sure I wrote something along these lines in about 2015 or something. It was that long ago that we were hearing about burnout. Yes, the players get tired. They still play very well. That's the point. But I mean, the logical gaps with Nicol here. He doesn't think it's sustainable for us to play this way all the time, but he also doesn't understand why we didn't score 10 goals. How often do teams score 10, Steve? If they had that little bit more quality up front, I want to see a 10-0 win.
His complaint does seem to be that our striker only scored 3 goals.
I know, as if we had to settle for it. There's more.
Unfortunately, the way they do play is about as draining physically as it's possible to be. And I'm not so sure they'll last the whole season. So, as I said, if they can get 45 points before they blow a gasket, then hey, they're great to watch.
It's draining mentally listening to him.
Sounds like it's draining for him to go up a flight of fucking stairs.
He's interesting to look at because he's one of these people with a mouth like a cat's bum and his head just doesn't move. His head is like a big square cardboard box that somebody's drawn eyes and an arsehole on.
Like the old-fashioned towel holders that you used to get in your nan's kitchen, like those?
Yes, very much so. And anyway, LeBeouf chimes in again with more of his woo-woo, I watched Marseille.
We see how the player believes on him, and how much he can bring to the team. But that's the main problem. He's going to use the players as much as he can and at a certain point, the players won't follow because they're going to be almost dead, you know, because of the work that Bielsa is asking and the commitment he's asking. So that's where it's going to be problems coming up.
He learned that doing the research for that when he was playing a doctor. Almost dead.
This is the problem with the Premier League, as the guy referred to it. They act like we've never played football before, like we haven't had 2 years of this and it's not the same squad that put in nearly 50 games last season for him at that level and was still outputting it right towards the end.
And as if, I mean, the Marseille thing that everybody brings up against Bielsa, the reason he was having a go at their president before the season even started was because they didn't sign the players he thought they should sign to cover for players who were going away in January to the African Cup of Nations. Those players went away in January, form fell off, the whole thing fell apart and Bielsa was essentially proved right. It wasn't as if he didn't see any of this coming and didn't do anything to mitigate against it. The club didn't back him to get past the problems that he foresaw. So thinking that's going to happen again just because it happened at Marseille, it would need it's a completely different situation. And I think that's maybe what Frank is not getting. I think LeBeouf probably edges Nicol out in this particular duel of idiocy because he just slips into... It turns into basically an Aston Villa podcast at the end when Steve Nicol's trying to make actually quite a good point.
I don't know whether it's just me, but is there anybody else getting a little sick of watching Jack Grealish falling over in the field all the time? You know, he should have got a yellow card for a dive when he tried to con the referee.
What about Bamford? What about Bamford on Minks?
Well, listen, you can see that as well, but I'm talking in general.
What about Bamford? What about Bamford? Like fucking the French Chris Wilder.
If he's going full hello, hello, he should call him Bumford, really. But
what about Bumford?
Steve Nicol just sounds drunk, doesn't he? Oh, yeah, I don't like to see that sort of thing. That's a problem. It's social media has done this.
They should have scored 10.
Everyone's gone on about this on Facebook and stuff. I'd end my day and there was no need. All the running and stuff. You don't need that. On a Tuesday night, you need to go out and have a fucking skinful. That's how you build a team. And all this running and this nonsense about overlapping and overloading, it's a load of bollocks.
He does sound very weary of life in general, does Mr. Nicol, doesn't he?
And this is ESPN's coverage of the Premier League in America. Like, you know, you're trying to promote the game to young fans.
Razzmatazz.
We wondered why that... That kid on the Manchester City YouTube channel sounded so like when he came on and he was standing in the dark and you say, Manchester City losing to Leeds or drawing with Leeds. I'm sure we won that game. This is why they get it from Steve Nicol, educating the new world in the people's game. It's terrible. Don't watch it.
You Ken Bates villain of the week. Who is it?
I think LeBeouf. LeBeouf has a long running problem with Bielsa. He was on... program with Dugarry when Dugarry said that Bielsa was a bit autistic, and it all kind of kicked off after that. But he was saying, yeah, Leboeuf previously, he's somebody I don't like. I don't like his life philosophy. I don't like how he manages a group. And for me, he's shown nothing. So, yeah, Leboeuf can fucking do one.
Do you know what else I didn't like, Frank? Your role in Avec ma belle-mère et moi in 2014 when you played a French resistance fighter. Rubbish.
Shite.
That might have been a different film, actually. Doesn't matter, really, does it? I don't think you're a good actor, Frank.
All right, Leboeuf takes that. What about the Andy Hughes Hero Awards? Let's give some nominations to our players. I mean, right up top, Bambo, Bambino, George Galloway might have doubted him, but we've never had a bad word to say about him, have we?
No, we've said before, I always thought he'd score a good 20 goals in any Premier League team. Moscow's got him down for 38.
And I don't think that's unrealistic, the way he started. I wouldn't have thought he'd score 46 in the Championship. Now, amazing.
Well done, Bambino. Capped off to you. Melier, what about that save from Grealish's... From Grealish's solo run. It was a good save, that wasn't it? It stopped a media wank fest.
It did. We'd have had to see that over and over again. It'd have probably been put on like the titles of Match of the Day and stuff. It'd haunted us forever. So as it was, it just was a thing that Grealish didn't do completely right in a game that his team got spanked in.
He's altered history. It was like watching an episode of Quantum Leap. Melier, I think maybe, what was it? Sam went into his body and put things right. Saved us from a terrible alternative future. And let's just remember, Melier, 20. There's no reason for a goalkeeper to be this good at 20 in the Premier League. I love him.
He should be doing a YouTube channel with sound effects on it, shouldn't he? Making his own.
Maybe he will. Maybe he goes home. Well, what would a Melier sound effect like? Just doing little vocal sound effects on a little compilation of all his saves. Sending them back to Bielsa when he WhatsApps him a training video, sends them back with gun noises.
It was Fitzroy Baggers, who is on Twitter, who brought this one to our attention. And something that sailed under the radar, 61 minutes into this game against Villa, Click did the free kick on the far side. So it was on the left-hand side of the Leeds attack. And he took a free kick just inside the Villa half, sort of level with the edge of the centre circle. And he did that trick where players roll the ball out, but a lot further than it should be for the free kick. And whoever it was on that side of Villa's midfield stepped forward and then kicked it back as if to say, you're not supposed to take it from there. And that was Click's intention. As soon as he did
I know, dickhead.
Yeah, he put his hand on the ball and then kicked it straight past the guy who just given it back to him, to Harrison on the wing. And it was absolutely brilliant. So if you want to see that, have a look at the clip. And Steve L. Turner, who's on Twitter, has found the clip and it's on his Twitter feed of Click doing that. It's great fun. But he was in fine form on Friday. Good footballer. I really, really enjoyed his half turn, you know, to set up Bamford's one on the edge of the box, where he just sort of sailed past a couple of players, just using, I mean, speed and fitness. I mean, that's not allowed, is it? God, you need to have more than that. That's no good for Leeds United. And he just upset Grealish a bit, so fair play to him.
I enjoyed his debate with the referee after he'd fouled Grealish, and he was trying to get the ball off him when Grealish had it on the floor. Grealish started coming in saying so much. I think Grealish talked the referee out of booking Click, because he was going on so much, and you could see Click kept turning around to the ref, like, is he going to shut up so we can talk? And I think the referee in the end was like, can't believe that wanker. Anyway, don't do that again.
I'd like to give a nomination to Sheffield United, who are doing good things this week by losing again. They lost again. I don't know if you noticed that.
You know whose fault that was?
Whose was it?
Patrick fucking Bamford.
Well, Sheffield United have got the good grace now to, they know that we're back in the Premier League. They had their fun last year. They had a nice time, didn't they? But the party's over now because Leeds United are back. The big boys are back. And they've had the good grace to defer to us as Yorkshire's number one team.
They should really bite the bullet and get Warnock in for the end of the season. They're in a battle now. They're in a proper scrap. They need an experienced man.
I mean, that would get Billy Sharp back in the team immediately, wouldn't it? He'd look around that dressing room and say, I mean, they spent some big money on some big strikers here. There's Ollie, I like him. He's a rough looking lad. I don't know if he was found working on a farm, but Sharpie. Got to put him in. Yeah, a player like that, he'll score goals whatever level he will. I mean, what did he get last season? Was it three? I mean, can't argue with quality.
And obviously, last but by no means least, the Leeds Fans Food Bank, whose charity, not pay-per-view campaign, raised an absolute boatload of money, closing in on 57 grand at last count, which is an absolutely phenomenal effort. But also, to Leeds fans for stepping up to the challenge and doing something really, really good with that.
Yeah, the supporters trust have kind of led all of this, and it's been a it's synced up nicely with all the stuff going on with Rashford, who probably deserves a nomination as well, in truth. But
not having it, is he though?
No, we're not going to. We'll give it to Leeds fans instead. But yeah, it's raised a huge amount of money, and it's been quite satisfying to not give it to Sky or BT or whichever channel I didn't watch it on.
Well, we gave them the Andy Hughes Hero of the Week award last week. So this week, can we give it to Bambinho? Because we've kind of deferred him having it for a couple of weeks, and I feel he's laid down a marker now.
You think he's never going to score again?
Let's just say we need to strike while the iron's hot.
I do have a slight concern about this week, because I've been so happy with our second half performance that I do keep getting that nagging thing of, what if this is as good as it gets? Which just shows I am still quite pessimistic deep down, even when things are good. I'm just like, I'm never going to play that well again. We'll probably never win 3-0 again, never in the Premier League. That'll be it. We might finish 17th if we're lucky.
We're not. It's Champions League and then a glorious tour of Europe. We can actually finally deliver on the booze baton party in Europe next season. So we'll bookmark that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still Munich, isn't it?
Yeah.
When we get there.
Go back and we'll trounce Bayern. Okay, so is Bambo having the Hero of the Week?
Naturally.
Well done, Patrick Bamford. On the way this week, then, we're going to be talking about hat-tricks over on the Extra Ball. And if you are a TSB Plus subscriber, you get full digital access to the magazine. And not to mention, probably the glorious hidden part of this that we don't shout about enough, your daily email, Moscow, which is actually quite good. I like how it's written. You should probably have a think about doing stuff with words in future. That's my recommendation
it's
to you.
All in the past. Yeah, it's all right. People seem to like it. There's jokes.
If you enjoy his Evening Post column, it's like that, but no one's edited it.
Makes you think anyone edits that. I'm being mean about the Evening Post now. There's no sub-editors in media anymore.
I do enjoy it, though, when I do occasionally find a typo or a spelling error.
Oh, I mean, it's very much written quickly, so...
You're really selling it.
Complain to somebody else.
If you want to hand us some money over in exchange for that, have a look.
For a hastily written rush job that the Evening Post would reject.
Have a look at thesquareball.net/plus. We'll catch you next time. See you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.